Welcome to today's episode of The Power of Reinvention. Here we talk with my guests about the dreams, the visions, and the passions that individuals have every day and dare to explore them. Whether it's business or personal, you're entitled to live the life that you want, and no matter what the circumstances, you have the power to create success, fulfill your dreams, and live with passion. That's what I'm talking about. So dare greatly and happy reinventing, folks. Let's do this. Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Power of Reinvention. I'm very excited today to have my guest, Jay Altshuler, with me. Hi, Jay.
Hello, hello.
How are you doing today?
Fantastic.
Well, we both decided that we're delighted that it's a Friday because, you know, I think we're both ready for it.
We live
this crazy whirlwind, busy lives that we all live. And I think, you know, we're starting to appreciate weekends even more and more these days. But I really appreciate you being on my show today, Jay. And I just want to give a little background on you and why I thought it would be really fun to talk to you today and have you on here to share your perspectives on how you've gotten where you are with our audiences for the power of reinvention. And I think people are so often looking for ways to figure out what's next in their lives, what they could be doing, what they should be doing, what they might have done that was an aha moment somewhere along the way that they take for granted. And it's fun to kind of revisit some of those moments and realize where we are in our own journey and whether there may be another aha moment ahead of us. So it's always a fun conversation and you never know where it's going to go. So for those who don't know, Jay is the Senior Vice President, Global Media at MasterCard. He's an accomplished marketing leader with over 25 years of experience as Senior Vice President of Global Media at MasterCard. He oversees the brand's paid media investments worldwide and governs the relationship of the company's agencies of record. Prior to MasterCard, Jay led Samsung's Global Media and Partnerships Division, as well as Unilever's Global Media Innovation Group. And amid the internet boom of the late 90s and early 2000s, Jay played a key role in driving the digital media transformation for several brands and worked with agencies like Starcom and PhD and internet startup company agency.com. He has developed award-winning media campaigns for beloved consumer brands like Coca-Cola, Procter & Gamble, Kraft, and Discovery Networks. And I think I'd be remiss in not sharing that you have a really cute little pup named Graham Cracker Max, which that name just like, I love that. I think we're going to start there. Where did that name come from?
Well, I have two young girls. And so the name was theirs. At the time, my girls were 9 and 7. And so
I love that.
The first name came from my older daughter and the middle name and last name came from my younger daughter.
I love that. I love that you gave them both. You know, it just creates this great, great little sort of synergy of the two. It's funny. And I smiled when I saw that because we just got a puppy a year ago. And the naming exercise of your puppy, and my kids weighed in, although they're not living at home anymore. And this is our third dog now. And they've had a dog ever since they were babies. I didn't grow up with dogs. So for me, it was all kind of a new experience, but it was really a beautiful thing for our children to grow up with a pet and a puppy and not only have the responsibility, but just the joy that comes with having a pet in the home. And it was quite the process, the naming exercise. Like, what is a name that is endearing and lovable that you want to call out that feels like, you know, it's like when you name your child, you're like, do they feel like a Max? Do they feel like a Charlie? We ended up naming our chocolate lab Charlie.
Charlie.
And we had a Lucky, we had a Rocky, and now we have a Charlie. So I saw that and I just smiled when I saw the name of your dog. It's so cute. So Jay, I love to start this conversation, especially given all that you have accomplished and where you are right now in your life, with the question that takes you back to your childhood, which is, did you have any idea what you wanted to do when you grew up? And did you envision yourself living this incredibly creative business life? Did you want to be a doctor? Did you want to be a guitar player or a rock star? Like, have you seen your life take the journey you ever anticipated, or did you just kind of wing it as you went along? How did you get here? Where did it all begin for you?
Yeah, you know, thanks for that question, and thanks for having me, Kathy.
I really. I know it took a little cajoling to get you on here, but I'm so thrilled we're here.
You know, only you, Kathy, can get me to talk about me.
Thank you.
I love it. So, kind of going back, you know, all the way to my childhood, I would say, you know, as a little kid, I grew up, you know, wanting to be a center fielder for the Yankees. I mean, I thought, you know, that was going to be my life. And then, you know, by seventh, eighth grade, I realized that maybe I didn't have the God-given talents that would allow me to get to the major leagues and be a center fielder for the Yankees.
You know,
with that said,
that you was know, kind of you to give that position up to somebody else.
You know, I grew up in Arizona, you know, and my parents were actually New Yorkers. So they were transplants. They left New York in the late 60s and ended up moving to Arizona. And so I always had kind of New York as a little bit of a backdrop. It was always just kind of part of the discussion. And my parents had thick New York accents. And so, you know, some kids go to camp when they grow up. I always got sent back to New York. So kind of New York was always sort of, you know, sort of a character in my life, my childhood. And I had an aunt that was in advertising, and that kind of helped maybe start that journey.
Wow.
And that's kind of how it all started to take place. I knew that I wanted to be in New York at some point. There was just something about the way my parents kind of talked about that lifestyle, and then all of my extended family there. And so that was kind of planted, I guess, at an early stage.
Yeah, it's nice when you have that sort of pull to something that you just have a visual and some connection to, and it creates that curiosity, right?
Yeah, you know, and it felt that it was just something completely different than Arizona and kind of the day-to-day life that I was living. There was definitely a gravitational pull to, you know, kind of the big city.
I love that. That's really fun. So at what point did you make the move, and what was the impetus for actually making it? Was it when you got to a certain age? Was it college? Was it a job?
Yeah. Yeah. A little bit of everything. You know, I think there was a couple moments starting in high school that I thought, you know, maybe marketing might be for me. You know, the first, and it's just funny that I distinctly remember this, but I was eating lunch with a few friends. I think I was a junior in high school at this point. And we were at a restaurant, and somebody ordered a Coke, and the restaurant only had Pepsi. I said, you know, we have Pepsi. Is that fine? And they said, no. And I was like, wow, like for me, it's like, it kind of tastes the same. Like I'm surprised that you are that passionate about Coca-Cola. And I spent a lot of time asking him like why he felt that passionately about it. And I realized, you know, at that point, kind of like the power of a brand in our lives and how, you know, kind of people can self-identify with brands. And then, you know, that kind of led me down a path of like, how do brands become that powerful in people's lives? And what's the relationship between people and brands? And so that's kind of started my pathway kind of in high school. But then it really kind of solidified in college. I was a business major and started out as an economics major. You know, I think for me, the way my brain works, I'd like to have sort of frameworks for understanding, you know, kind of how the world works and how people make decisions. And, you know, kind of economics was a way to do that, you know, kind of based on like this quote unquote rational man. You know.
But I think that's an interesting point because, you know, as you look at the many shades of marketing, if you will, 50 shades of marketing, maybe there's a book in that for you, right? I like that. That's a good book title for you. Okay, we're going to work on that separately.
I don't know what that means, actually.
But really that notion of, you know, the business side of marketing versus the creative side of marketing versus the experiential side of marketing. Like there are so many pieces. I run a marketing agency and people often say, well, what does that mean? And when I was just a PR agency, it was very defined. Now it's marketing at the top, and PR is a vertical within multiple disciplines of what we do here at the company. And when you look at any brand, any organization, having that framework, as you just said, the business, the economics, everything inures up to that goal of how you create and build a business that is revenue generating, that is, quote, successful. And, you know, if all the creative and fabulous marketing and promotional and PR and social, all that stuff is all fabulous, but it's not affecting the bottom line, and someone's not kind of marrying those two together, there is an issue, right? Oh, yeah. So having that mindset, as you just pointed out, and understanding that is such a great driver.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think we as marketers, you know, I'm making a broad statement, but I think, you know, part of the reason people gravitate towards marketing is that it does, you know, kind of tend to work kind of both sides of the brain. I mean, it is equal parts magic and logic, and that, you know, and every day it's becoming, you know, a little bit more scientific and more mathematical. You know, there's more, you know, kind of mathematical underpinnings, but ultimately, you know, it is trying to find that balance between, you know, kind of connecting the dots, understanding kind of the larger frameworks of how people make decisions, and then finding creative solutions to answer briefs and answer, you know, kind of pain points or to hit business goals.
Right.
You know, and ultimately, you know, kind of, that's what I was saying, kind of, you know, there's in college, I found kind of economics fascinating in that way, but it actually didn't answer certain frameworks of really, you know, kind of, I was just trying to pressure test some of the, you know, kind of classic economics based on a rational man and, you know, versus how people, I found, you know, kind of people in my world making decisions, and sometimes there was disconnects. And so I ended up starting to take some consumer behavior classes. And then actually that's when everything kind of just like the light bulb went off for me. For me, that was like a framework that really connected with the way that I started to make decisions and noticed how my friends make decisions. You know, really, when you start to match economics with consumer behavior, that's behavioral economics. It just didn't exist at the time.
Wow.
But I think that's what really underpins marketing. And
I love that. And yeah, the psychology of it all. It's so funny. I often share, when I filed for my major in college, I wanted to be a psychologist. I thought I did. And I'd already done an internship and worked in the PR business. So I knew there was something about the human connection that I really enjoyed, and sort of the notion of taking something and telling stories with it and getting other people engaged. I didn't really understand at that point what that really meant from a business standpoint, but I wanted to sort of delve into psychology, and I took Psych 101, and I was like, oh, I don't want to spend my life analyzing other people's problems, which is so ironic because it's exactly what we do.
It is.
In the world of marketing. But there is something really special about being able to understand and tap into the human psychology and behavior. And yes, the fundamental of this space in marketing that really at the end of the day is what that is all about. So were those the courses you were taking that really led you to that kind of aha moment of, okay, I'm starting to get clarity on where I want to go?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, that was the biggest aha moment. I mean, starting to take those consumer behavior classes, matching it with, you know, sort of classic economics, started to create the right framework for me to make sense of the world around me. And, you know, I started just naturally gravitating to those types of courses. Again, at that point, I mean, I was a sophomore. I didn't fully know, you know, what that was going to mean in terms of, you know, kind of a career path. All I knew was that I wanted to go be with my aunt in New York, and she worked at an advertising agency, and that seemed pretty good to me.
Amazing. Which agency was she at?
So at the time, she was at J. Walter Thompson. I'll tell you kind of a full circle moment in that, you know, a couple of years later, she moved to McCann. And I had just started in the business. I was probably a year and a half in the business. And I remember sitting with her one night, we were having dinner, and she was just telling me this story. She was just so exhausted working on, she was running new business for McCann. And, you know, she was just exhausted with this pitch. She had this amazing idea and could not sell it in to this gosh darn client. And she knew it was a killer idea. And she was talking me through it. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I think that's amazing. What she was working on and who she was pitching at the time was MasterCard. And she sold in the campaign. She sold in the Prices campaign. And here I am,
20
plus years later, working on MasterCard.
Wow. And your aunt must be looking at that today saying, this is priceless, literally.
The longevity of it. She knew it was a winner. I don't think she could have ever, you know, ever really envisioned that this was going to be as enduring a campaign as it's been.
Wow. I love that story. I mean, that is really precious. So it took a while for you to get from there, agency world, right, to being at MasterCard. So let's talk for a moment a little bit about what that journey was. You've been at some incredible companies and brands. And I think, you know, it's interesting. We often, I mean, I've had my own agency for over 30 years, so I haven't lived this, but I see it through the lens of our friends in the business. And, you know, when you're at a company, which is such a wonderful company, and then you pivot to go to another great brand, what were some of those moments like? What drew you? What pulled you? What pushed you? You know, what was that all about for you?
Yeah. You know, when I first started in the business, I wanted to soak up as much information as possible and just gravitate to the places where I felt there was real energy and learning and leadership in the world, in the business world. You know, and at the time, that was kind of working on packaged goods. I mean, Procter was an amazing learning experience for me. You know, for me, that was graduate school for me. You know, kind of just working with what I felt was, you know, the best and brightest people at the agency, the best and brightest clients at the time. You know, kind of working on, you know, what felt like really meaningful business. You know, at a certain scale that, you know, was hard to match otherwise. And so, you know, I really spent the majority of my early career on the agency side working on packaged goods and kind of Procter and Kraft and Coca-Cola, you know, and loved it. And I really just felt that I was getting, you know, kind of just an amazing kind of on-the-job education, you know, and, you know, there was a aha moment, I guess, during that, where, you know, kind of this internet revolution was kind of taking hold in the late 90s and 2000. And, you know, I remember kind of having a discussion with my managers, just, you know, asking to get deeper into that. You know, could I work on, you know, kind of digital, like an extension digital agency inside the ad network and, you know, move off of Procter? And, you know, I was just getting side glances. I mean, like, people just didn't understand what I was asking.
What language are you speaking?
You're already working on the best client. Like, you're doing great. You're having a great career. Like, don't mess it up. But I felt, I mean, this was a pivotal moment for me, in that I made the decision to kind of leave what, you know, at the time was, you know, dating
secure
myself, but it was DMBMB, and it was a, you know, great agency working on a great account, and went to an internet startup called agency.com.
Did it feel risky for you at the time? Like, was everybody around you going, you're nuts? Like, what are you doing?
Yeah. All my coworkers and my bosses thought I was, you know, it was silly. It was just career suicide. You know, aside from a few core people that I really trusted.
What did your aunt have to say? Did you consult with her on that?
I did. She was undecided. She thought that I was still relatively young in my career where I should take some risks. And if this is where it felt like the business was going, you should pursue it. That was her. Nice. It was very good. It was very good advice.
Right.
And a few years later, she commended me. So it was the best thing that you ever did. And I will say, it did change my entire career. It changed the way that I viewed business, viewed my role and, you know, my true north within it, you know, and springboarded me, I think, to, you know, to new places and new heights, and gave me, quite frankly, you know, a distinction, and, you know, a different type of skill set that other senior leaders, you know, relatively senior leaders at my level didn't have at that point.
Right. Well, it's almost like an entrepreneurial mindset when you go to a company that is, you know, really sort of in a different, not only a different vertical, but is sort of taking a risk and doing something new and innovative, there is that very entrepreneurial mindset where you have to sort of throw out the playbook of what's been sort of tried and true. And I think I've spent most of my life in that space. So I so appreciate that sometimes you don't know and you're not working within a framework of security. And that's where you really have to innovate and you have to lean in and you have to take risks. And it sounds like you were really starting to have the balance of both, which is, as you said, distinguishes you from what maybe other leaders or managers were doing in the company at the time.
Yeah. You know, and it came back full circle, you know, kind of almost four years later, I was asked to come back to then what was Darkon Media Vest to run a piece of business at a kind of senior level because people didn't have that full kind of end-to-end expertise.
Right.
And so I was being sought out for that experience.
That's pretty special. So that sounded like it was the right time for you to make that move 4 years later. And then from there, what became that next aha moment, the next pivot? Was that a push, a pull?
I think it was a pull.
Yeah.
So, you know, kind of a dear friend of ours and someone that I worked for many years, you know, who, by the way, I was at agency.com with, ended up going to Unilever.
Yeah.
You know, I had gone back to Starcom Media Vest, to then run the Coca-Cola account, you know, kind of a integrated fashion. And I was having a really good run there, you know, and ended up getting a call, and, you know, he asked me to kind of go client side. You know, at the time, and I'm making a really broad generalization, but at the time, kind of like those client side media roles, you know, cause I was working with, you know, obviously all those sort of client side media folks, you know,
right,
for all those years, but the general sort of framing of those roles were, you know, those are kind of roles that you take, when you want to kind of like take a step back.
Yeah.
Right. They were kind of more 9-to-5 roles and kind of management roles. But, you know, for people that were maybe wanting to kind of take a step back in their career.
Yeah.
Rightly or wrongly, that's kind of like that was kind of how it was positioned. And, you know, I had an honest conversation with, you know, my old friend and old boss at the time who was in the role for a couple of years. And he's like, you know what, I'm reinventing what this means. The company's reinventing what this means. This is the role for you. Please come.
Wow.
Not regret it. And I trust.
Sounded exciting.
And it was the best thing that's ever happened to me. And it helped really, I think, solidify my true north and what gets me up at night or gets me up in the morning and keeps me up at night and gets
keeps
me up in the morning. But, you know, I really gravitate towards transformational roles and companies that are going through massive transformation. I think that's where I shine.
I love
rethinking, you know, kind of models and how we leverage new technologies and new tools and understanding, you know, matching that with new consumer behavior and, you know, creating new go-to-market models that ultimately, you know, going to drive the business.
So you love that, but reinventing within a company sometimes can be incredibly challenging. Because maybe you and one other person or six other people feel the same way. But as we know, it can often be like turning the Titanic around. How do you navigate that? And I think it's almost can be a metaphor for a lot of instances in our lives where we have a sense, we have a knowing, and you clearly have an expertise and a skill set and experience and a knowing, which has always led you. You do have this innate knowing. But when you've got to get a lot of other people on board, and especially when it comes to a company, not an easy feat. What was it that, you know, you felt was your superpower that enabled you to engage the teams that needed to be a little more open-minded, take the risks internally? I mean, it's human nature not to want to take a risk, let alone within a company where there's a lot riding on it. So how did you and probably do today, every day, navigate those moments where you're like, trust me, And that's fine. I can say that as a head of my company, and then everybody has to trust me. Not as easy when you're within a bigger organization, and yet you've managed to do that. Would you say that there is a skill set, a process? Like, how do you navigate those moments?
It's definitely a process, and I've gotten better over time. I think, you know, when I first started kind of like this transformation role at Unilever, I didn't necessarily have a framework at the time. You know, some of it was going on a very deep listening tour. I needed to truly understand the pain points that our marketers were facing, right. You know, and tap into those, you know, tap into the problem statements that they were posing back to me, and then, you know, kind of trying to create solutions. I mean, you know, it's in many ways, it's, you know, it's simple in that, you know, ultimately we are here to solve problems. And, you know, and find the most efficient and effective ways to solve those problems. It wasn't about digital just because it was the shiny new toy and for digital's sake, right? It was learning the language of the business and how these new tools could apply to help solve their problems. You know, and when you become a problem solver, lots of doors start to open up.
Yeah, I love that. So you had to sort of really get the sign off, and you made waves, you had impact, led an amazing team, and then you decided to go work at another company. So what was that moment about?
Well, I think this is, you know, I will frame that as happy wife, happy life. And so, you know, kind of the Unilever role started off in the US, but ultimately most of my time at Unilever, I was working in the UK, in the headquarters, and partly just in the way that we were organized for me to make the most change throughout the organization. I had to kind of go to the center and impact change from the center. And that meant, you know, picking up our life. I had just gotten married, by the way. And so, you know, this is how we started our life and our marriage.
And your wife, I'm assuming, was from the US as well.
From the US.
The UK.
Yeah. Yes, from the US, and had a big job also in at an advertising agency. And, you know, she left that role, and, you know, we had a new life there. And so I sold her on kind of 2 to 3 years tops. And here we are 6 years kind of without end in sight. And I you know, I was definitely drinking the Kool-Aid. I was going native. I loved it. I think she started to get worried. We had both of our kids sit there. So now, you know, we have 2 kids under 4. I was traveling a lot, and, you know, it was working for me. It wasn't working for her.
Yeah. I get
and
that.
You know, I needed to hear that and understand it. And, you know, ultimately she wanted to get back to closer to her family and where our friends and family were. And it was the right thing for us. And so I was trying to kind of get back through Unilever. It just wasn't working with the timing, and kind of an opportunity presented itself to take on another really amazing transformation role at Samsung. And that's kind of what led me to that. Yeah. But, you know, amazing. all finding the right balance between, you know, kind of work life and family life.
And it's interesting because these are brands that, you know, they're global in scale. Their headquarters are in different countries. You know, there's a lot to navigate in all of that. And it sounds like it's an area that you really excelled. It was probably very grounded in your expertise and your knowledge and what you were able to bring to these companies. You also being with a company like Samsung during such an incredibly and explosive time of technology and digital, all just sort of really exponentially growing.
Yeah.
That must have been a bit intense and very drinking from the fire hose kind of period of time as well. Was this anything there that you felt particularly challenged by or inspired by or that excited you, like you said, that, you know, made you wanted to like jump out of bed in the morning? It was like, I cannot wait to go do this today. What was that like, especially working with Samsung in that period?
Yeah, I mean, on the plus side, I mean, I think, you know, Samsung operates, you know, kind of at one of the largest scales of any company in the world. I mean, you know, kind of the budgets just, you know, kind of put you kind of right in the center of the action, along with the fact that they are a technology company and inventing the tools that, you know, are so critical that we all use every day. And that was the draw. That was the draw. And that, you know, I could kind of operate on the biggest stage and take, you know, some pretty amazing moonshots, you know, and it was a company that wanted to take, you know, some big risk. And so they allowed me to really, you know, kind of reimagine, you know, kind of the media team, you know, kind of through digital and through data. And, you know, kind of create their first CDP and set up the right data lakes and, you know, create a powerful, you know, kind of accountable modern media practice that they didn't have. And that was the draw. You know, with that said, you know, I had worked, like I said, up until then, you know, my career was mostly CPG focused and, you know, CPG is marketing led by nature. And, you know, kind of, there's a certain, you know, kind of just marketing language that is second nature in these companies that was an awakening for me kind of going over to Samsung, which was an engineering led company. And by the way, not an American culture.
Exactly. A very different culture.
Those were all steep learning curves.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's certain things that I took for granted you know, working with Procter, working with Unilever of, you know, kind of just general understanding of certain, you know, just basic marketing principles that, you know, we had to kind of take a few steps back and train and teach, you know, before you could even talk about, you know, why digital this and that. I mean, just even understanding, you know, kind of just, you know, how to plan a media budget and, you know, the impact of media. I'll just tell a funny story, but, you know, I think this kind of just typifies. I mean, we were a sponsor of the Oscars. And, you know, we had a pretty, you know, sizable relationship with the Oscars and a good media investment. And, you know, I remember, you know, we'd spend months, you know, crafting, you know, these plans because it always aligned with the launch of a new phone. And, you know, we were doing all the activation on the ground, you know, kind of in California and planning everything. You know, the show started and we ran we were the first advertiser. We were spot 1A, you know, which was great. And I, you know, the spot ran and literally 2 seconds later, I get a text from somebody in Korea. How's the campaign working? We just saw the spot run. How are the sales? I'm like, okay, all right. We have to do some education on how marketing actually works.
Oh gosh, I love that. That's almost like, for me, it's like client 101, you know, like that. That's fascinating. I mean, you did. I remember I thought you were going to tell a different story about your Samsung moment and one of your influencers, the personalities who was in the
Ellen?
Center of, yes. No, not Ellen. It was a young man, like an influencer of sorts. I forget his name, but it was a campaign, I think that, you know, not so long ago that was quite impressive. So, yeah, and I do remember what Ellen did. Wasn't that the selfie moment on the stage, right?
That's right.
Yeah. No, a lot to be proud of, and just the way you guys came at things and in the period that you were there. So kudos to you. I mean, what fun to work across different verticals, different industries, and kind of going back to what you said in the beginning, to be able to apply economics and business with human behavior, consumer behavior, the psychology of it all, and through what I would love to talk a little bit about, this kind of reinvention of the industry, really. And it's where a lot of our conversations are at the moment around this show is, you know, the reinvention of the marketing, the psychology of human behavior, what draws people in, the access. You know, you talk about CPGs and they've always been a retail-led business, and now there's so much of the direct-to-consumer business with CPGs and brands that are in some ways bypassing it, and then all of a sudden retailers become media platforms because they're acquiring media channels and in-house television programming. And, you know, it's like there are no lines between the industries anymore. It's all very blurred and very interconnected. So when you sit and look at the landscape of everything you've done over these years, these companies, these brands, how do you feel about this reinvention of the marketing of it all?
Yeah, I mean, you know, for me, I think it happens to be my true north. So I really, you know, I really love it. And that's what energizes me. I think that's ultimately, without me understanding quite, you know, all the dimensions when I first entered the industry, I think that's what truly like gravitates me towards this industry, maybe versus some other industries. You know, it is so creative, and I think it demands us to constantly rethink our approaches, just because everything changes every day. You know, and that's what I love. And so, you know, I just, you know, you're kind of talking about this confluence of all of these, yeah, these dimensions. And, yeah, you know, I apply that to my business every day. You know, and I have to hand it to my boss. You know, when I was interviewing for this role at MasterCard, you know, the brief, if you will, take everything you know about media, rip it up, throw in the garbage.
I just got chills. Over. I love that.
Rebuild it for us. I'm like, wow, like that's an awesome brief. That's an awesome brief. And so
that, you know, didn't scare you. You really embraced that, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, what better brief? You know, and part of that is honestly, you know, having that grace to, you know, kind of rethink what it means to kind of go to market from the lens of media, and what even constitutes media, you know, has allowed us to take some really interesting swings out of our group. So let me just give one example of that.
I was just going to ask. Thank you. Please do.
It may kind of speak to kind of what you're talking about, kind of like this confluence of things.
Yeah.
So at CES this year, we actually made an announcement that we are launching kind of a new generative AI tool for small business. We're just calling it, you know, kind of MasterCard Small Business AI. And you wouldn't think that, you know, kind of a media team is developing and launching products inside a company. But we are, because of, you know, just the ability to kind of just relook and reclassify what media is and what it stands for. And so, you know, kind of what is this tool? It's pretty exciting for us in that, again, kind of going back to consumer behavior and consumer insights, you know, MasterCard works really closely with small businesses and right, in particular, kind of underrepresented entrepreneurs, especially, you know, kind of women, you know, people of color. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe unsurprisingly, you know, it's these underrepresented entrepreneurs that are having a tougher time succeeding.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, kind of over 80% of these businesses fail within the first year.
Yep.
And, you know, the reason why they are failing by and large is because they don't have access to the proper mentors who have walked their path, you know, who understand, you know, the headwinds that they face and the particular challenges that they face. And that is a really profound insight. And so, you know, we're like, okay, you know, Gen AI is, you know, I know it's kind of the answer for everything these days,
but you
know,
how do you use it in a powerful
way? Yeah, there's a tool here that, you know, we think can help. But the paradox is that, you know, kind of Gen AI in itself is biased. And so that was a really cool brief for us. Said, all right, you know, as a media team, how can we help solve this? And the way that we went about it is that we felt that we had to build and train our own model to create a new, you know, kind of generative AI model that we could train that ultimately can act as a mentor to these small businesses. So the way that we were going to change this model and train the model was build a media coalition. You know, with the best and brightest of all the diverse publishers out there that speak to small businesses and partner with, you know, small business mentors themselves.
Right.
And build and train a model kind of by and for these underrepresented small businesses. And, you know, again, this is kind of led by a media team because we have the relationships with the publishers.
Sure.
You know, and then we can bring in the right team to help actually do the technical build and all the CX and the design, you know, and by the way, the part that also I think, you know, we're really proud of with this, not only do we feel like we are creating solutions for underrepresented small businesses, but kind of in this backdrop of kind of maybe technology companies not necessarily having the best relationship with publishers and fully maybe valuing the content that they have. you know, we wanted to make sure that we did this in the most responsible way. You know, we are licensing all this content from publishers. We're paying them properly, you know, and trying to set the right model of how, you know, kind of technology can work with publishers. So it's not just scraping the content and, you know, and we are making sure that publishers are getting properly compensated for this as well.
Right. What incredible impact. I mean, look, I have been a small business owner, a female small business owner for over 30 years. I hear what you're saying and so appreciate that a company as large as MasterCard, with so much going on, has the insights and the ability to look at a vertical like this and say, this is how we can be really powerful and impactful. It's not just about the bottom line of, you know, X, Y, and Z, but it's literally empowering an entire community of business that, and we know the growth of female-led companies these days and the ability to be entrepreneurs, which we're seeing a whole new crop of. I do a lot of mentoring and I'm part of so many of these amazing organizations, and it just thrills me to hear the way MasterCard and your team are leaning into this, because it is so necessary. And we don't have all the tools and all the access and all that it needs. And I love paying it forward just because I can after everything I've ever done. And it's extraordinary. And thank you. Thank you for sharing that. I'm sure a lot of people aren't really aware, if they're not connected to it in somehow, that you're doing that. You know, it's really very impactful.
Yeah, thank you. We're excited about this. It's going to launch in the second half. And then, you know, we're excited to see where this can go. You know,
amazing. Well, we'll have to check back with each other on that for sure.
Yeah.
You know, you said a little while ago, I think you've said it twice now, and I just so appreciate it because it's a term I use often, is living your true north. And, you know, I look at you, and most people are listening to this. They may see a few clips along the way visually, but I see a twinkle in your eye when you speak of what you do. And one of the reasons I wrote the book, Reinvent Your Life, What Are You Waiting For?, launched the podcast, was because I found that so many people walk around without that twinkle in their eye. Mm. And I've had it all of my life because I've been blessed to know that I wanted to run my own business, and therefore I did. And everybody used to say, oh, you're so lucky, you get to do what you want, when you want. What I love is that you have been doing that in the framework of amazing jobs, amazing experiences. You sort of, I feel like you might have always had that twinkle in your eye, and if not, you've searched out the next one. And I commend you for that. And I think it's such an inspiration. There are so many people working in companies that maybe haven't quite yet figured out how to do that. And I love to say that I want people to feel entitled to live the life that they want, because if you know you're entitled to it, you're going to seek it out. And so it kind of starts with knowing that. It feels like you kind of always knew, and you've made little pivots or big pivots at the right time in order to kind of maintain that status quo for yourself. And it's a good status quo. It's the kind that most people aspire to have. So I really appreciate what you're sharing in this conversation. And I'm hoping that those who are listening and that are looking for that little nugget of inspiration or motivation, try to find and tune into the thing that really excites them, that makes them want to jump out of bed in the morning. I know I have that every single day, so I so relate to that, you know, point of view. And I think it's great to know that, you know, you don't have to be an entrepreneur. You don't have to start your own chocolate shop on Main Street. You can, by all means, but even within the framework of a big company, a job, that there are ways to find that. And honestly, it's not always all about the job either. You know, there are all these other parts of ourselves, relationships and hobbies and spiritual or health and fitness and so many other happy places in our lives to focus on and to find, you know, that great North Star that's going to put us in a place that makes us just happy. I mean, you know, it's our lives. So we are each the center of our own life, and we've got to create that for ourselves. Do you find that there are other things outside the realm of work that really are that for you? Like some of your hobbies or passions or interests? Clearly, you have a beautiful family and a cute little puppy. But are there other things that, as you start to think of, you know, what could be next, even if you stay in this job, but, you know, is it travel? Is it certain goals that you're looking to maybe incorporate somewhere in your life?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I really appreciate what you were saying there as well. You know, I mean, we always talk about kind of just being the captain of our own ship, and, you know, we are in control of our future. We just have to kind of really map out where we want to go. You know, I think that's always been part of, you know, what I've tried to do is, you know, kind of just think about what makes me tick and understand kind of how to match that to where business is heading and then figure out where to go and kind of chart a course. You know, and so, yeah, you know, I realized, you know, I had a little bit of a quarter life crisis, you know, kind of early in my career. And, you know, it just became clear to me that I needed to operate with purpose for me to be happy. And, you know, kind of part of that purpose, like I said, was finding out what made me happy in business, which was around, you know, kind of transformational roles, you know, and kind of reinventing. But I also know that I am happiest when I can find that right balance between, you know, kind of work life and personal life. And, you know, I play a ton of tennis. I love staying.
That's active. Right. You know, we're both tennis players. I love that. Yep.
You know, so like actually during the pandemic, I started like really playing a lot again. And it actually helped me get through that moment in time. You know, it was just a great way to kind of be outside and reconnect with friends. And, you know, I also find tennis to, there's a lot of corollaries between, you know, kind of tennis and business, and there's a lot of strategy.
And a lot of strategy, absolutely.
You know, you need to be mentally fit, you need to be physically fit, you need to, you know, learn and deal with a lot of adversity that comes up, and, you know, there's a lot of imperfection. And so,
I love that. Well, I can so relate to you on that one. That's definitely my happy place.
Exactly.
I love that. So I've got a fun question for you, Jay. If you were to have a dinner party, I know you've worked on some incredible campaigns in your life. You've probably met some very, very interesting people. If you could have a dinner party and have maybe three or four people, dead or alive, you know, who really have either inspired you in some way or that you would just love to break bread and have a glass of wine with and, you know, just have that conversation. Is there anybody that comes to mind that just that you think would be super cool to do that with?
I do have four people in mind. I hope it's not cliche, but let me give it a shot.
Please.
A great question. All right. So first, which is probably the most cliche answer, but it really is true for me. I would love to have Albert Einstein at the table. I mean, you know, there's just nobody that, you know, when we talk about kind of frameworks that make sense of the universe around us, I mean, there's nobody better, I think, that explains.
I love that. Oh, you know, imagine
how to make sense of the world around us. And, you know, I would really like to see if there's connection points within the way that he thinks, how we could apply it to our world and our industry. I think it could teach us a lot.
Today,
Two, I think Winston Churchill would be an amazing person to have. I mean, not only does he have probably the best stories and insights from a pivotal moment in history, but I think, you know, there's probably a lot that we could learn from what's going on in the world right now with that sort of historical context.
Definitely.
And I wouldn't mind, you know, sharing a cigar with him after dinner.
Think you might be able to get him out on a tennis court? I don't know about that.
I think he'd like to be the judge, I think.
Exactly. He'll be the umpire.
On a little bit more of the creative side, I would love to have dinner with David Bowie.
Oh, wow.
I think, you know, for not only do I love, you know, kind of just music, but I just think he is a special artist in just the way that he constantly reinvented himself with every album. You know, I mean, he really, I think, stayed true to the very end of just his creative process and what that meant for him, what it meant to, you know, I don't think he saw himself as a musician. I think he saw himself as an artist.
I agree.
His life that way, you know, and maybe, you know, even during the dinner party, he might be so nice as to play some music or lead us all in karaoke.
Exactly. Oh gosh. I love that.
And then last, I guess, maybe full circle, just where I started, I would love to have Derek Jeter sit at that table with me. You know, as just a fan of New York Yankees, I think he was one of my all-time favorite New York Yankees. And I just think the stories that he has of just, I couldn't get enough of like the clubhouse behind the scenes stories. But I also just appreciate the way that he played the game. I think that he was one of the most clutch players of all time. And like the bigger the stage, the bigger the moment, the more impact he was able to have. And, you know, and he was just like true grace under pressure. And so, you know, for me, that is, you know, how I like to model myself as well.
I love that. And that's such an extraordinary group of people. I mean, just from so many different walks of life, you know, they say that you're the sum of the four or five people that you surround yourself with, which says so much about you when you look at these people and their orientation and where they came from. And I just so appreciate what that table could be like. I'd really like to be at your dinner party. Thank you very much. That's amazing. And I just so appreciate you, Jay. I love having you on here today. I love this conversation. I appreciate your willingness to be so open and share your journey. And, you know, I think you reinforce for so many that are listening just this notion of, you know, following your heart, your passion, your true north, your interests, like, can really serve you. And when you lean in and allow that, you can really create what you want around you and in your life and let it take you. And I feel like you've really been able to do that. So I really appreciate you being able to share your perspective. Any kind of last thoughts or anything that we didn't touch on that you feel would be necessary to share or interesting to share?
Yeah, you know, well, I just want to thank you for this. It was, really great talking with you. And, you know, this exercise actually helped me, kind of just reflect a little. And, you know, and I guess I'll just end with that. I mean, I find the process of reflection also really important in, you know, kind of figuring out, you know, how to make sense of, you know, kind of current states. I think we just, we're living in these VUCA times, and, you know, there's a lot that gets thrown at us every day. And, you know, we like to say that, you know, kind of business has never moved this fast, but it's never going to move this slow again. And so, you know, we have to constantly just reassess and reevaluate, you know, kind of just the decisions we make and how we go do what we do. And, you know, that process of reflection, I think is really powerful in the way that we do that. And I think it helps center us, align us to our goals and our purpose and our passion, you know, and I think it's these sorts of moments. So I want to thank you for allowing me to do some of that reflection as well.
I love that. And thank you. That's a very powerful statement. I literally just got chills. It really is at the center even of my book. And it was something that many of us were forced to do during the pandemic. And the irony of my book coming out the week before the pandemic actually sent us all home. It was not lost on me, because the mandate was sit back, reflect on your life. Are you living the life you want to be living? All of a sudden, the whole world was asked to do that. You know, whether or not they wanted to, it actually was sort of the great reinvention moment for the world. So, you know, how ironic that my book would show up in that very moment. And of course, being the marketer that I am, I took full advantage of that. So I really appreciate you just kind of really ending this conversation on that important point, like sit back and reflect on your life, where you're at, how you got here. Are you living your true north? And I believe you really are. And I can't wait to see what the next chapter for you is going to be. And I just really appreciate this conversation, Jay. So thank you again. Thank you for being my guest here.
Thank you, Kathy. I appreciate you as well.
All right. And for those listening, there will be notes, show notes here attached to this podcast. You can reach out to Jay on LinkedIn if you feel the need to connect with him. And of course, all of these interviews are on the reinventionexchange.com platform and all of the podcast platforms where you find your favorite podcasts. So thank you again, Jay. Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll talk soon.
You as well. Take care.
Thanks for listening to The Power of Reinvention. If you enjoyed this episode, please head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and review the show. Wouldn't mind a 5-star review. It would be greatly appreciated. Also, be sure to visit thereinventionexchange.com to share your reinvention stories, suggest a guest, join the newsletter mailing list, get access to my book, which is called Reinvent Your Life, What Are You Waiting For?, and discover fantastic bonus content with my blogs, and listen in to the Reinvention Virtual Chat Series. Don't forget to join me next week for another episode. Please share with a friend, and thank you for listening. Happy reinventing.